Mayor Lightfoot replaces her chief of staff and names a new chief operating officer. And why edibles are the future of the marijuana business. Crane senior reporter John Pletz joins me to talk about how Chicago, with its deep roots in the food business, is well positioned to capitalize on their growing popularity.
That's one of the other wrinkles about doing R&D in a really, really tightly regulated industry. You know, everybody thinks of edibles in the cannabis business, you know, is somebody in college in their apartment or their dorm, you know, making up brownies and just throwing weed in there. And it really is sophisticated.
I'm Amy Guth, and this is Crane's Daily Gist for Wednesday, May 26th. In these uncertain times, it's important to have people you trust by your side. When 11,000 local business owners needed a Paycheck Protection Program loan, they turned to their Wintrust banker to secure funding, because that's a relationship they can count on. Businesses are navigating some of the biggest challenges they will ever face. Wintrust is here to answer their calls. They'll answer yours, too. Start the conversation at wintrust.com/dailygist. Member FDIC. I'm joined now by Crane's reporter John Pletz, here to talk about recent reporting he's done around the cannabis industry, specifically about marijuana-infused snacks and how Chicago is positioned to take that on, given the city's food business history. So tell me about this story and what you've learned in your reporting.
The cannabis industry, it's starting to, you know, mature. The industry is evolving. So on a couple of fronts, on the product side, you've got this evolution of going from what everybody associates with the weed industry, which is smokable cannabis, to a much greater focus on edibles, because there's, as you look to attract new users and even some old users, people who either don't want to smoke or can't smoke in certain settings are attracted to edibles. And so there's a lot of emphasis on that for business reasons. And, you know, as we've written about before, a number of the largest cannabis companies are based here in Chicago. One of those is Cresco. And they've got an R&D facility out on the west side where they spend a lot of time working on edibles and other things, but mainly working on edibles. And so you get this intersection of food and cannabis. And, you know, Chicago, for both those reasons, we have a long history in the candy and food business, as well as the large players in cannabis. You get this sort of interesting intersection of those two industries.
And this lab space that you wrote about, I thought it was very interesting. One detail that I thought was very curious about it was, because the actual THC can't leave the licensed facility in Joliet, they're using a synthetic version of that in the lab to make up all these formulas.
Yeah, it's another one of those weird little wrinkles that illustrates Chicago's really sort of deep industry in food. There's a lot of companies here that do nothing but make flavoring and ingredients for everything from, you know, candy to other foods to drinks. Because they can't work with actual cannabis in this lab, because it's not one of, you know, Cresco's production facilities, which are very tightly regulated by the state. A lot of what they're doing with edibles is you're trying to, in many cases, cover up or mask the very distinct either flavor or smell of cannabis. So there's a company in town, one of the flavoring ingredients companies, makes a product for them that mimics that flavor of cannabis. And so that's, you know, the thing they work with. So they're using that additive and then figuring out all of the ways to sort of adjust or adapt or, you know, counteract those flavors. It's kind of crazy. They were telling me that for the people in the food lab to sort of do quality control and say, okay, you know, the thing in the formula that you came up with in the lab, once it gets, you know, to the production facility, you know, how does this taste when it's coming off the line? Well, they're not able to just sit there and pop gummies, you know, in their mouths as they come off the line. So they actually have to have them have samples that came off the line mailed back to them. It's just kind of this crazy thing. And that's one of the other wrinkles about doing R&D in a really, really tightly regulated industry. You know, everybody thinks of edibles in the cannabis business, you know, is somebody in college in their apartment or their dorm, you know, making up brownies and just throwing weed in there. And it really is sophisticated. The products that they're making have to taste as good as, have the same kind of textures as you get with, you know, with any other candy, with any, you know, any other product. So that's really what they're spending time on.
That's interesting, that manufacturing process. So once a product is developed, to manufacture it with the THC in it, that would happen at the licensed facility.
Yeah, with the actual cannabis in it. And that's, you know, the, you know, CBD, which is, it's cannabis, but doesn't have THC. So, you know, that's the sort of thing you can get over the counter. And, you know, there's been a lot of usage of that, obviously. You know, THC is the active ingredient that makes, you know, marijuana, you know, classified as an illegal drug at the federal level. So that's the thing that, you know, that is very tightly controlled and you have to work around. And the folks who do that work, which is also a big part of doing edibles, do that at their production facilities. That's where the chemists are. And the folks I happen to meet are the food scientists who are trying to come up with products that look good, taste good, you know, will attract users who don't want, you know, a smokable form of cannabis.
I think that's so interesting to have to like think through just like product development around all of those regulations. I think that's very interesting, but probably sparking a lot of creativity. In your reporting, you note that some big chefs like Mindy Siegel are kind of getting involved here in that creation process. What about any big food brands? Have any of them started into that yet? Or is that something that's probably going to happen after we're seeing this legalization on the federal level?
Probably have to wait for legalization on the federal level. A number of, whether it's beverage companies or even food companies, have talked about, you know, I believe Mondelez at one point talked about maybe exploring doing something with CBD, you know, which is a cannabis that doesn't contain THC. But I don't think anything came of that. I believe last week, Sam Adams announced that they were creating a small subsidiary in Canada to experiment with the beverage business. And that's, you know, that's one of the other products that a lot of companies are looking at. You know, I think GTI is producing a cannabis beverage developed by a California company. And then several of the other cannabis companies are looking at, you know, these concentrates, cannabis concentrates that can be added to water. And they're trying to figure out, you know, they think that you know, that a beverage is something that everybody's pretty used to. They think that's also going to become a category. So you've got this whole kind of spectrum of things going on. But, you know, in terms of where most people think the industry will evolve long term is that, you know, cannabis will be like other consumer packaged goods. It'll be another consumer product. And those companies will get into the space. But for right now, as long as it's federally illegal, you know, it really creates a barrier to any of the big companies. And that's sort of what opens this window, you know, for the existing cannabis companies to develop products, develop brands. And, you know, eventually, if you get widespread legalization, you're going to see this wave of companies either from the beverage industry or the food industry, you know, come into cannabis.
Yeah, I imagine if this much R&D is going on right now, and experimenting with all of these different products, the minute that any sort of federal legalization may occur, I can imagine there'll be so much just acquisition of smaller companies that are developing products, and that will keep you very busy in reporting all of that when that happens.
Yeah, the M&A wave, if and when that happens, will be immense. But you can just imagine the R&D that you think is going on now, which is really, you know, curious and interesting. You're sort of getting to see this industry develop. You know, it's literally in its infancy. Imagine sort of the R&D infrastructure of big food or big beverage getting into cannabis. It's pretty immense. The other interesting thing that's happening here that came about is that you were seeing the cannabis industry draw from big food's labor pool. You know, so the talent is already coming into cannabis companies. And so, you know, a place like Cresco, you know, the folks that run that lab, you know, the food scientists, were working at, you know, either food or flavoring companies or consulting firms around Chicago that, you know, sprang up around the candy industry and the food industry. And they're drawing on that expertise. And you've also seen executives at a number of the cannabis companies have come out of, you know, the beer and spirits companies. You know, so they're already drawing on that talent base. You know, you're already seeing those two industries sort of converge. And a lot of that's happening in Chicago.
Yeah, I'm sure plenty more to come. Well, we'll have to talk more about it. Thanks so much, John. Appreciate you taking the time to talk it through today.
Glad to do it. Thanks, Amy.
Coming up, United Airlines launches its own vaccine lottery, giving away free trips to encourage travelers to get vaccinated and to upload their records. We'll talk about that and more right after this. Here's a great way to stay in touch with Crane's Daily Gist. Subscribe to the Crane's Morning 10. It's our daily newsletter featuring the 10 biggest stories of the day. To subscribe, visit chicagobusiness.com/morning10.
You're listening to Crane's Daily Gist with Amy Guth.
Turnover continues in Mayor Lori Lightfoot's administration as her office announced that Chief of Staff Maurice Klassen would exit after roughly 2 years since the mayor's inauguration. Replacing Klassen is Sybil Madison, who was previously Deputy Mayor for Education and Human Services. The moves come as Lightfoot works to fill a number of vacancies across her administration. Lightfoot also announced her new Chief Operating Officer, Paul Goodrich, who will oversee infrastructure, transportation, regulatory, and municipal administrative services, and, according to a press release from the mayor's office, various COVID relief funding sources. Chicago is opening its third round of COVID-19 rental relief with more than twice the amount of funding compared to last cycle. The Emergency Rental Assistance Program is offering up to 15 months of rent and utility relief, fueled by $80 million from the Federal Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriation Act that was signed into law in December. The city said in a release that the funding offers crucial assistance to Chicago renters to avoid a wave of evictions and to Chicago property owners to avoid foreclosures and resulting housing instability. A.D. Quigg is reporting the story in detail for Cranes.
Chicago has opened up its latest round of COVID-19 rental relief applications. They're offering up to 15 months of help for rent and utilities for landlords and renters. It's the city's biggest round of rent relief since the pandemic began, worth $80 million thanks to federal help. The last round was $33 million and ultimately helped more than 10,000 families. It comes just before the state is set to roll back its moratorium on COVID-19-related evictions in August. Cook County offered up $73 million in rent relief earlier this spring, and the state recently announced a $1.5 billion rental aid program. Applications for the city are open now through June 8th at chicago.gov/renthelp. To be eligible, tenants must live in Chicago, have suffered a hardship due to COVID-19 that could include job loss, reduced hours, or illness in the household, or be at risk of housing instability. Landlords can apply for assistance on behalf of a tenant and can also register their properties to be notified if a tenant has applied for rent help.
Just 2 months after cashing out on a pair of Fulton Market properties, Chicago restaurateur and real estate entrepreneur Mark Bushala is looking to unload two more in the trendy former Meatpacking District. MAB President A.G. Hollis confirmed that the company has hired the Chicago office of Jones Lang LaSalle to sell a pair of development sites along Morgan Street between Hubbard and Grand. Hollis declined to share an asking price for the vacant parcels at 450 and 464 North Morgan Street, which MAB Ventures acquired in pieces between 2016 and 2019 for nearly $6.4 million, that according to Cook County property records. But the sites, which total more than 26,000 square feet, could sell for nearly twice that amount based on the sums that investors have paid for other development sites in the area. Danny Ecker is reporting the story in detail for Cranes.
Fulton Market just continues to act like the pandemic basically never happened. I mean, properties are starting to sell at really high numbers like they were before COVID. Companies are already signing leases again in the neighborhood while most of the rest of downtown remains pretty quiet. And massive new developments are being proposed again. So Mark Bouchala's investment group sees this and is looking to seize the moment with a pair of shovel-ready sites a few blocks north of Google's main office. And in the vein of new developments there, we had news this week that Trammell Crow, which is developing a big life sciences lab building right now at 400 North Aberdeen, wants to build another 650,000-square-foot office building that would likely cater to life sciences companies as well. And next to that, they want to build a 33-story apartment building, with apartments now being the hot development use there since the city lifted a ban earlier this year on new residential buildings in the neighborhood north of Lake Street. So Fulton Market on many fronts is picking up right where it left off pre-COVID.
United Airlines is giving away free trips to members of its frequent flyer program who upload proof of vaccinations to the airline's app or website through June 22nd. The airline says it will give away a year of free travel, which it defines as 26 round-trip flights, to 5 people. It will give another 30 winners round-trip tickets for 2. United said that it will be flying 80% of its pre-pandemic schedule of flights in the U.S. in July and expects to fly about 60% of its pre-pandemic schedule of international flights. Airlines have been pushing for digital vaccine passports that would make it easier for passengers to travel, but a single standard has yet to emerge. Nonetheless, vaccinations aren't required for domestic travel, though many overseas destinations will require them in lieu of quarantines. For example, Spain said it will allow vaccinated travelers to visit the country starting June 7th. And that's Crane's Daily Gist for now. Our continuous news feed lives at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks so much to our guest today, Crane's reporter John Pletz. Be sure to subscribe to these conversations on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you like to get your audio on demand. And find hashtag Crane's Daily Gist on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn, and let's continue talking there about these and other business stories. Our show is produced by Todd Manley at Earsight Studios. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll meet you right back here next time.